Well, this next specialist and WHO insider, I think, will bring us an insight we haven't had yet. We've been inside of the hospitals, we've been inside of even the vaccine creators, but we are not aware of what's been happening in the conversations at the WHO and how that works. That's why I'm really excited. I saw a video that was put out of Dr. Astrid Stuckelberger, who was on the Research Ethics Review Committee at the WHO. This is just a taste of the video I saw before we reached out and said we'd like to go deeper. Take a look at this.
The pandemic is organized internationally in a systemic way. WHO, what I see now is that they don't communicate. They are dictating a will of not communicating. They are doing live presentations, very general, generalizing, changing words, changing definitions, not giving precise data, not giving precise science. And what is pretty, it's very shocking, is that all the medias in the world say the same thing, the same words in the newspapers, and they are paying the media for producing what they want. The task force and the scientists that are built to lead this pseudo-pandemic are actually helping the rhetoric of the press, the way the press wants, the way the government wants, and we don't have a debate. We have censorship. Censorship is the first, you know, sign of a dictatorship. They censor doctors, they censor treatments that work. They go to pharmacies and they take the whole stock of ivermectin that works really well. They go and stop scientific people from doing good data collection, saying it is not valid, and they put their own data that's completely in conflict of interest. So WHO, with the medias, the main medias, they have very well analyzed the system. And they're head of the International Telecommunication Agency. So you can put all this together and they have the whole system in their hands. Clearly, they want to destroy a depopulation. They are trying to lock down the liberties of people. The freedom of people is really disturbing them. They want to annihilate any thinking and emotion and cognition. So I'm just, you know, calling people to wake up and take back your health. Don't believe in the government. You're creating a perpetual pandemic.
It's a brilliant video made by the people at Planet Lockdown. You can check it out. The YouTube channel is the Worldwide Truth Channel. Definitely check out that interview. It's brilliant. But I wanted to get into some more details. So I'm honored to be joined right now by Dr. Astrid Stuckelberger, coming to us from Geneva, Switzerland. Dr. Stuckelberger, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
To begin with, when, you know, we hear WHO insider that you worked at the WHO, can you sort of describe what your affiliation with the WHO has been?
Well, it has always been temporary contracts or consultancies or expert in different committees. But I started by doing my master degree in the mental health division with Dr. Norman Sartorius on a cross-cultural diagnosis. And that was really fascinating. So I was 28 years old and I was already in WHO. And so I was fascinated by the fact that all the countries together can try and solve a problem.
Right.
Which I'm a bit disillusioned today.
So the WHO is there to solve a problem, problems of the world, the World Health Organization. You were also a review committee member. What did that entail? Like, I mean, of ethics, actually the ethics side of it, which I think is a huge question right now. What is the ethical position of the WHO and their effect on the world?
Yeah, in every research you do, normally you have an ethics board. But how can WHO have an ethics board? I was surprised to be called there because I have done ethics before. So the fact is that there are some researchers that are trying to get sponsorship or at least have the label that WHO is supporting them in research in the world. And that can go from treatment in primary care to teenager treatment. And there's a review board and they need an independent expert. So they had some ethics there because there was some independent ethical board member. They were worried about that. So it was very well organized, but we had to read the papers and there were quite a lot of papers, fill in a blank formulary to respond to what we thought were not ethical or ethical. And we finally, I got money for WHO ethics to do a case book of international research ethics training. And so it was with Harvard School, medical school, and this training was very interesting because you can see very well that, that is a terrible picture. Anyway, it was the International Day of Older Persons, and you can see Margaret Chan.
But, you know, whether it's a good picture or not, I just want to say it proves you're there amongst all of our best friends of the High Wire. So say hi to everyone over there for me.
I had not slept.
Klaus Schwab, love you, man.
Oh, gosh, that's a terrible. Anyway,
okay.
But Margaret Chan was very nice, and she came to me at the end and said, can I help you? And I was like, I can't understand why she wants to help me. Yeah. But I think she was in desperate need of ethical people, because now that I read the story, I can see that she was entangled as a Taiwanese who was successfully, and she is, and she has successfully managed this COVID, because Taiwan has only had 200 cases,
right,
or deaths. So she was taken there as under China, because Taiwan is very, very, right, entangled with Chinese. So, and she was a beautiful person, really. But the ethics committee had a role then, and the four principles of ethics, I just remind people, is to do good, do no, right, harm, treat everybody equal. And here, what is very important, to have autonomy of decision. You are always able to choose with free will whatever happens to you on the ground. And if there is a research, you are supposed to have an informed consent, which is, right, not the case today. It is that we are not informed at all, because they are deviating every rhetoric. They're not informing people. They're hiding the truth. They're hiding definition. They're fraudulent in their analysis. And in the conflicts of interest, which was one of the parameter of the ethics committee, you could not have conflict of interest. And the researchers that were sponsored by pharma were out of question.
Wow.
And I think today there is no ethics committee. I don't see, I know that Abba Saxena has resigned, and she left with her husband, who is a mental health division director. So you see many things in the ethics of what's going on that does not correspond to what WHO is saying. For example, that you have to give back to the people the research results very quickly.
Yeah.
And in the case of vaccine, I just heard before, we know, for example, in Europe, there is already absolutely confirmed by UDRA vigilance at least 18,000 deaths linked,
wow,
directly to the vaccine. In a normal research, you would stop this immediately. And there's 1,800,000 severe cases. So this is only 1 to 10%, according to Rainer Füllmich and other scientists, about of what is really on the ground, happening on the ground. Because as a doctor, you have to, fill in a big formula. It takes time. You have to be sure that there is a cause effect with the vaccine, like immediate death, you know, after the vaccine has happened. But there's a lot of censorship. So ethically, we have absolutely no application of what WHO has promoted.
Let me just ask you a quick question. It's a little bit off of where I wanted to go, but as you bring it up, you know, I try to understand the mindset. You've worked with these people. I mean, ethics is a part of, you've had these conversations at the WHO. Do you believe when you say that number, like, you know, 1 million severe injuries and 18,000 deaths? I mean, these are pretty big numbers to, you know, when we think about this, a product that's being injected that killed those people, meaning they'd be alive today had this intervention not come into their lives. Do the people around that are in the WHO and the scientists involved with that, do they just say that's still a small number when they look at the size of the world? Is that the calculation they're making? Even though do no harm is supposed to be the drive, that seems like old news. Do no harm meant don't harm anybody. Are we now at a point where, you know, we can harm 18,000 people to save 1 million people? Or do they just ignore it altogether and wear blindfolds and say nobody's being injured? Because they're saying on the news, no No one's being injured. There are no deaths. I've seen so many doctors repeat that on the news as though there's just, this is, as Fauci just said this week, this is one of the safest vaccines we've ever seen. There's really no harm. There's no deaths. So is that a lie? And he's accepting that casualty, or does he really believe that? And the people in the WHO, do they believe this stuff?
I'm really shocked what's going on, because everything of what we have taught in, when I was on mandate for the 3 years, 4 years with the International Health Regulation is not happening. And I was in charge of the risk communication course. And in the communication, you must be transparent. You must tell the truth. That's the least normally. And you must listen to people. You must base it on facts, and you must show. And that's where you don't see that at all. Since the beginning, I saw there was something wrong, because normally when you detect an agent, you analyze the risk, the agent, the timeline, the effect, the toxicity, and you don't know at the beginning that there is a progress. And we did not see any progress in the communication. It's been a standardized communication since the beginning. And in that way, they are not ethical in communicating, and they're not ethical in the way that they are proceeding to communicate, because normally you have the shock room, the strategic operation of the pandemic, or the strategy of health operation room. And that's where the experts, which I don't see, by the way, at all anymore. I don't know where they are, in the cupboard. I don't know. And in this room, they have a very sophisticated, they had a sophisticated system of collection of data with GFIN, the Global Public Health Network System, the GORNS, the Global Alert and Response Network, the GIS, the Global Information System. And you see Tedros and his team coming, like, you know, they're in the news, just being general, like I said, in Planet Lockdown, and they're giving absolutely no detail. He's right. Not even a doctor now. It's clear, you know, it's coming out the truth. And, you know, a question you were asking about, you know, how are they lying? How do you act in the United Nations, and WHO is just a child of the United Nations, if people lie?
Right.
And I was always wondering, because it happened before, you know, where is the ethical and regulation body that would go and punish someone who does not do the right thing? And in this case, it is clear that Tedros and his team are lying. They're not doing science. And who can we call to stop him? to stop them?
Who's over him? Right. And who's his boss?
Yeah. So who's his boss? How can, you know, if you have a kid in a family, the father or the mother comes and say, you know, you're lying, get out right now, we're going to stop you. But in this United Nations family, normally it is the General Assembly. Yeah, that's the General Assembly right in September. And we can maybe call upon them, where all the presidents come together every year, General Assembly. Yeah. And who is the chief in command there is the Secretary General. And at the moment, it is Guterres, who is from Portugal, and who was the former High Commissioner for Refugees at the UN. So we should write to him and tell him, you are responsible of the United Nations Assembly and General Assembly. Please stop this pandemic and stop WHO. And I have talked about this with lawyers and said, you have to stop him. Now, if you want to attack with a bioweapon, because it is a weaponized biological arm, this vaccine, I have no doubt with all the evidence that's there, that we should actually attack with the Convention of Bioweapons. And who is in charge of this convention? It's the Disarmament Assembly here, but more directly, the Security Council in New York, led by five selected countries plus some others, which is absolutely not equal, not ethical. So we are trapped in a system. But I think that's where you can understand that we are currently in a member state system that is more corporate members who are obeying to a boss. and a multinational dictating. And we are going to come to this part is Gavi, the Global Alliance for Vaccine, has taken over WHO.
Really?
Basically.
So when we look at Gavi, I mean, obviously this is, and look, there's been Geert van den Bosch who came forward and was talking about the dangers of vaccination causing mutations, had worked with Gavi. I mean, this is a huge, I think it's the most funded, you know, arm of vaccine in worldwide vaccination programs, right? I mean, it's, Gavi is gigantic. Virtually every nation's involved. It's yes. a brainchild of Bill Gates. So what is Gavi's involvement? Because we see funding in the WHO. We know Bill Gates is in there separately. And then, you know, honestly, when Donald Trump pulled the United States of America out of the WHO funding, Bill Gates was sitting in the number two position, which was astounding. I thought that that seemed to be shocking, especially a man who's not a scientist that seems to be promoting both the idea of vaccinations, the idea of passports, tracking, and also the idea that we need to reduce the population of the world, all, you know, sometimes in one talk. Those are weird things to put into one thing. But you have some information looking at Gavi from the perspective of being in Geneva and the WHO. So what's really going on? What's Gavi's connection with WHO?
Well, first, let me say that you're right. He's not a doctor. He's not a medical doctor. And you can see this by his reasoning. So is Tedros. And he has the psychology, the profiling, if I could say, of a computer scientist and more than that, a technology freak, because it's a funny picture. And so we can come back to this, but I had to make the historical chronology of his involvement with WHO to understand.
Okay.
So I went through this. I think your auditors can really dig into this much more because there is so much. Each time I get into this file, I find new papers. So I have shared with you many, and I hope that they can use it.
Yeah.
So for the chronology, the Global Vaccine Alliance has actually created a foundation in Geneva under the Swiss law. And there are many NGOs in Geneva. You can create an NGO. I can do one for you in
okay.
1 hour.
Well,
if you have two other people.
So we have this headline, the Federal Council concludes a host country agreement with the Gavi Alliance, mm-hmm. Global Alliance, having taken into account that the tasks of the Gavi Alliance are essentially of a state nature, together with the preeminence of the public sector in its representation and financing. The Federal Council, invoking the Host State Act, decided to conclude a host country agreement with the Gavi Alliance, thereby conferring on it the same privileges and immunities as those normally granted to an intergovernmental organization. Lay terms, that sounds to me like basically when we say we can't touch a diplomat in America because they're a diplomat from another nation, have they made Gavi untouchable in Switzerland, that they are basically like a diplomatic group that can't be touched? And
yes, absolutely.
Wow.
And I actually, that's the document that triggered my search, because some, you know, undercover whistleblower who gave me documents said, look at this, Astrid, they have total immunity. And I was finding more and more documents on the website of the Swiss Confederation, the Swiss government, with signatures and agreements between Gavi, Swiss Medic, which is the FDA of the U.S., and so government Gavi, WHO made agreements. And I thought, this is wrong. That's not right. And so I read this paper, and they have not only total immunity, they have more immunity than member states. And
wow.
You can find the document on the government website, but it's in French, on German and Italian. It's our three national languages. So you have to translate them, but I can just tell you the points. They don't pay tax at all. They have total immunity and more than member states, because they don't need to declare anything, whatever they do, whatever they spend, whatever they have in their suitcase, whatever, when, you know, Geneva is an international city. We have more meetings in the UN in Geneva than New York. You have to see how many agencies we have. We have the World Trade Organization, the International Telecommunication Union, where, by the way, all the ministers of telecommunication assemble, the WHO with the ministers of health, the ILO with the ministers of labor, the refugee with the ministers taking care of refugees. So, you know, you can go on, and they have everything here. They have, and it's very easy to access in Geneva as an NGO once you have your accreditation. So I have no doubt they had a facility of accreditation to the United Nations. I represent actually an American NGO academic since 20 years to the UN, so I know very well how it's operating and how you can do statements and how you can lobby. And they can do this all the time. So not only they had this badge very quickly, but they had access to all the agencies, to all the ministers very easily. And they became, from an NGO that they created in 2006, they created an NGO, then a foundation. From the foundation, it became an international organization that has more power almost than the United Nations organization. My hypothesis is that they are higher as a multinational over the governments. There is a hidden governance behind the United Nations clearly today, because they don't obey to the way member states can give a voice. Have you heard any minister of health having a contradictory voice to what WHO does?
No.
There has been a few.
Yeah, Sweden,
but there has
maybe
been a few deaths.
Right, Sweden, I think, has kept out. Yeah.
Sweden, but they catch them up later with the vaccine campaign.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I was in Sweden, I organized a Stockholm Peace Summit post-COVID. It's now translated in English, so I can also give you that. It's available. It was in December, and we chose that because there was facility. It was easy to come there. So when we came, no mask, December, everybody was locked down. But Professor Tegnell, which I invited to open that day, said to me a very strange message. He said, I cannot come and attend because there is a pandemic. But he had a voice to say there is no pandemic in Sweden. So I could see there was a change. And the room we occupied the day before we went to visit it, and they were organizing the campaign of vaccination in Sweden in December. So I think they thought, okay, we lost that battle, but we have no problem with the next battle. And the king of Sweden, after we left, was, you know, they're using everybody they can that they can corrupt. So the king of Sweden said, we have to get vaccinated. So you get it there.
Yeah. I'm picturing in Geneva then, do they have a complex? I mean, there must be a large established base then, because one of the questions we've been having on the high wire, and I've said it, I don't feel like my government is necessarily, I don't think decisions are being made from inside my borders anymore, especially with the size of what this pandemic has become. It's overridden all of our policies. It's taking away our freedoms. It's kept us from being able to work. It's, you know, it's taking away our right to make a living, to walk down the street, to breathe the air. And we're all thinking, where is this coming from? We hear about the Bilderbergers and these groups, but you're saying that there seems to be this mind, this thought system or control group that is established, maybe even bigger than the UN, and you're saying it's Gavi, established in Geneva. What is that presence like? Do they have a compound or a building?
Well, you see, that's where you can see the progression over time. There were in the biotech campus where I had my office, and with other NGOs that were already selling diagnostic tests like the FIND, the FIND, or the, and other things. But then they moved from there to a building of 8 storage, which I showed to James Henry of Planet Love.
Okay.
I said, yeah, exactly.
There we go.
And this has been growing like a mushroom. This was not existing 5 years ago, and suddenly it's there. And not only that, but the Swiss government has inaugurated this building and Gavi, and all the and it's not NGO, the international organization status of this building. And you can see the floors. Gabby has the two first floors on top. Then you have tobacco malaria. Yeah, very good. You can see very well there. The
right.
One and two is Gabby. That, I'm starting from the top. Then the third is tobacco malaria roll-up. Then there is Unitaid, which takes care, of course, of diagnostic and selling the medication. Then the Global Fund has all the rest. And all of them have the international organization immunization. When you look in the window, it is done like a bank. You have high security and it is empty. There are only a few people for the moment. So I expect that they are building their headquarters because everything is being more secured and locked down. The NGOs have no access to the United Nations anymore. They have not renewed the badge. I tried, they don't. And they have actually augmented the security in the United Nations main building, which I know very well. And so it seems like Switzerland is perfect. It's a perfect game player. You know, that we have the, you know, banking system that is secret. They have total immunity. They have the World Economic Forum. They have private banking. And you have in the Basel, the World Settlement Organization, which is very important, for banking system in the world and
Gavi's,
our identity.
All right. So Gavi's got this giant think tank / consulate, totally, protected, sitting in Switzerland. Now we see Gavi's got funding going to the WHO. Is WHO then just the voice or the action group for Gavi? I mean, what is the connection between Gavi and WHO in your mind?
Well, I have worked as a consultant for the World Bank until it was in the years 2003-2004 when it was James Wolfensohn at the head, and he was doing very interesting work also trying to include religious groups and NGOs. And I always asked him, why don't you take care of health and aging, because that was one of my topic. And he said, no, health is not in our domain. But when he stopped then. And when Wolfowitz, who was working with Rumsfeld and Bush, took over the World Bank, he started the whole system with Bill Gates. And they start now, I understand, looking back, what happened is that James Wolfensohn's died in November last year. So, he's not there to witness, but I can witness by the papers that I found. And one of the World Bank paper shows, which has the International Finance Facility Immunization Program, is a signature between Gavi, the World Bank, Wolfowitz, and WHO. And this is an incredible mechanism. It was suggested by the UK and Goldman Sachs Bank. It's written in the document. You have to find it on internet because you cannot download it. You can just print it. But this is a very important document because you understand that the word immunization, and this is really important, is equal to vaccination, global vaccination. It is in all the documents where you see immunization, there is in the back the vaccine business. And
right.
So they signed this with WHO member states, Gavi, the World Bank, member states, and they took money through the taxpayers and the member states through something called the Coalition of Epidemic Preparedness Innovation, CEPI.
Yep, CEPI.
And this and this mechanism has made the business of Gavi. They received so much money. I wrote somewhere the number because it's so big that I think it's 2.4 billion between 2005, since they signed 2005 and 2013. I mean, it's beyond even our imagination how much money they are just, playing with. And
right.
They put in this immunization financing facility, and this financial people will have to dig into this, bonds and a market advancement program, and it, there are words that I don't understand, but because it's too much into the finance, but I think they are playing a game of poker with the banking system, you know, with the bonds. They have vaccine bonds.
So you have the financing of this gigantic finance monolith sitting in Geneva as a member state. You have Gavi there as a member state. You have WHO all protected, having private conversations the world can't see, coming up with policy that isn't just affecting one nation. It literally is affecting the entire world. So when people say to me, you know, that I'm anti-doctor or I'm saying that doctors are bad or scientists are, they're all lying. I said, no. There appears to be a very organized small group of people that then dictate the policy to people that have all just been trained to do what they're told from above. In this case, WHO seems to have the name, but you're saying Gavi is really writing the policy then that's driving WHO to lead the world.
Yeah, there are many signs that they have been leading this since the beginning. There's one fact is that when you look at how the foundation was built, you can find in the registration the businesses in Switzerland, you can see who has been part of the Gavi Foundation, Gavi Alliance became that to hide this. And you can see in the names, two people that are very important, you can see that Tedros, that's the donor that they got from all the countries. So you can see here that the member states have given immense amounts of money, and it is our tax. I mean, where does this money come from other than our taxes? So we are actually financing the vaccine campaign and the death of people. You see how unethical this is? I mean, it's... Wow. It's so crazy that it's almost hard to believe.
So you're about to get into something I think is interesting. So we got Tedros. Now, we're under the impression Bill Gates, you know, funds WHO. WHO sits there, and sometimes WHO talks to Sage or they talk to Gavi and they get some help. But what you're saying is that there's a connection between Tedros and Bill Gates. Is that correct, that we may be unaware of, that's outside of the WHO? Explain that to me.
Yes, because in the Gavi board, you can have people that come in and out, and you can find the dates. And I found two former UN heads that were part of this Gavi alliance. The first one is, maybe you can see here, you can see Tedros about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The sixth line, you see Gabriel Jesus, Tedros.
Yep.
So you can see that the arrival date is 10 to 15. And I looked into the, you know, the definition. So he started on the 22nd of January 2009 to be part of the board. And that's when Gavi made the agreement with Switzerland. And he left on the 14th of September 2011, and he joined as Director General of WHO in 2017. Wow. So you see, he had already conflict of interest with a huge NGO. It's not an NGO, it's a business maker organization with total immunity. And Mary Robinson was the other person, and that's actually quite important, because Mary Robinson was a former president of Ireland, that she was also the head of the High Commissioner of Human Rights for many years. When I was working for an international year of older persons, and she was the head of it, and I worked on documents with her stuff. So I remember her very well. She was really good and ethical and human rights. But after that, she started from 2008, November, to 2011 to be part of Gavi, but not just as a member. She was the president of the board of Gavi, plus she had signature, so she could sign contracts. So can you imagine that the heads of United Nations had started to be part of a criminal organization, you cannot say another word, who has not paying tax, and we cannot go and arrest anybody in their office. This is what I forgot to tell you. The immunity is saying that the police cannot get in if there is a murder or if there is anything suspect. Nobody can come and take their computer. Nobody can come in and look in the cupboard if there is a skeleton or something like that. So this is already a very big conflict of interest.
Wow.
The second And I invite people to go and look at all the other names, because I had no time to do that. That's a big work.
We'll make all that possible. Everyone that's a part of our newsletter will receive all the documents that you handed us so that they can look through it themselves.
Oh, that's great. If they can do it, I would love to see it, because there is a entanglement with a lot of other things. You see, one of the psychology of organization that Bill Gates has done is he's creating organization of organization of organization where he is chair. And or Bell, the foundation, Bill Melinda Gates or Gavi.
Yeah.
So they are chair of different organization. And one of the UNITAID, you know, one of the organization that is in this global health campus that they created and inaugurated 1 year ago, 2 years ago, 2018, they are part of that. They're everywhere, but they don't look like they're, it's the illusion that this is for the good of people. And they are using the rhetoric of shared values, of equity. We are so equal that now we're going to vaccinate pregnant women. That's what they say in the SAGE. You know,
right.
We can talk about that after. But just before, I want to tell you also, in the WHO, the second sign that was very obvious is that after the International Health Regulation, we were supposed to train from 2013 on. We had the agreement, we were chosen, Georgetown University and Pretoria. And suddenly they cut it off and they sent us a letter and said, no, there is no funds left. And that was 2013. And now I discover that the global vaccine action plan that Gavi is leading started in 2012 to 2020. And that's also where they started building a framework with saying, okay, we have to help people and save the world. So the SDG is one, the universal health coverage is one, but they're mixing one thing. They're mixing health with disease. So they're talking only about disease and about vaccination. So the global plan action on vaccine is actually a plan of immunization and the aim of total immunization of the world population. And there you go with their plan of depopulating.
I just want to say that one of the things that we've been reporting on the high wires, and this was out of the meeting in Geneva, Switzerland, back in December of 2019. We talked about how WHO got together, how we're going to stop vaccine hesitancy. And the whole idea was they wanted a full vaccine uptake of every human being in the world. It was clear to me, it's clear to me that they're having issues with vaccines. We're starting to see strains of measles that's resistant to the vaccine. There's failure in the vaccine program. It seems to me that they have to have everybody vaccinated to try and fix some of the errors that they may have created. That may be part of this. But what's fascinating here is you're saying Gavi's driving this agenda. Now, I think a lot of people would say, look, hey, if Gavi's got the best scientists in the world and they're all getting together and they're putting out really good data and they're sharing that data and all the scientists say, hey, that looks really great, let's do that, then what problem is there? But what really shocked me in the video that you put out was when you say we're not seeing any data. There's no data. We're just getting these generalizations, which is what my complaint has been. Why is no one asking for, you know, if there's going to be, you know, 500,000 deaths in the UK, prove it. We're smart enough to see a chart in the UK. We're smart enough to see how 2 million people could die in America. Like, show us the data. What are we talking about? It's all this elusive, you know, no one will, you know, you can't see the background, the imperial model. No one could get their hands on it. Why is everything being closed off and shut down when science is supposed to be an open forum that people weigh in and it moves and it evolves? And as you've said, there's been no evolution from the beginning of this to where we're at now. What it sounds like is these talking points were developed in 2012 to 20. It was always just about, we've just got to get everybody vaccinated.
Yeah, it's like a bulldozer, you know, they start slow and they be bigger and bigger and bigger. And if anybody has a doubt, I mean, read the report of John Ioannidis. I mean, and what is very interesting, I mean, just as you've probably already covered that, shows there is no more mortality in 2020 than any other year former. The same with Switzerland, with any other country. So this is a gimmick. I mean, it's really a scam. And the PCR too. The PCR test, we know all that is wrong. But what is interesting and that nobody knows is that WHO has posted the Professor Ioannidis report in its WHO bulletin.
Really?
Can you see how perverse this is? Yeah. So yeah, Professor Ioannidis has made the first report, then a second, he published it. And you can find it January 2021, WHO Bulletin, Professor Ioannidis. So they're posting the contradiction with what they are saying. And the other factor you can see, when you look at the PCR recommendation, because I've gone into this for other lawyers, you can see that they have a medical alert, product alert. So they call the PCR a product, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And the medical product alert is that you cannot use the amplification cycle without noting it and having a doctor. And this is not followed, but you can find the fifth warning.
So saying, you tested positive, but we ran 40 cycles in order to get to a positive. Instead, we just hear positive, and you could have run 45 cycles when we know it's not really even anywhere near accurate, probably after 20, low 20 cycles, something like that.
It's not a diagnostic test.
Right.
It's a product. It's really not a diagnostic test. We all know this, and Carrie Mullis, the Nobel Prize, who created this, has said it and has fought Fauci since years about his PCR. Even at
Carrie
Mullis
said, don't ever use this as a diagnostic tool. Unfortunately, he dies moments before this entire pandemic starts. I could talk to you for days. We'll probably have you back on, but I wanted, there's something I want to talk about. One of the jobs that you had really, is my understanding, in sort of pandemic preparedness around the world was to visit nations. Right. And help them understand how they would handle, a crisis, whether it's a virus or things like that. And what we see right now is this sort of one size fits all idea. India is being treated the same way as Pakistan is, America is, the UK is, Greece. Everyone's got to be vaccinated. Shut down your businesses. Shut down your schools. I mean, I just think right away, there are nations where if you shut that down, you shut down business, there's no savings. These people are going to starve to death. Even driving across America, there's certain neighborhoods and counties, in states that are so poor, you recognize that a shutdown of a couple of weeks could mean death and starvation. So this idea that there's this policy where this is the way you do it. Is that what you were taught to do with the WHO? When you would travel these nations, was it always just a one size fits all? Here's the blueprint. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is what you're going to do in India. This is the same thing as what they're going to do in the UK and Australia and America. Is that how this works? Is that how science works?
No. No, it was exactly the opposite. You see, nobody talks of IHR anymore, the International Health Regulation. But the training was during 3 years. It was three groups of about 35 people each time, online, on site. And what we did is, that's the third course. It's on-the-job training. It's people from the ministries of health, from WHO office, from epidemic centers. And at the University of Geneva, in the Master of Public Health, where I've been teaching for 20 years, it was always about andragogy. It is means that adults who have already knowledge have to use their knowledge and their context to apply any new science. So, for example, every health system is different. If you have the small islands Pacific, we had people from Indonesia, you know how many islands they have, how many they can't even count. The preparedness plan is completely different because the port of entry of an agent, a virus, whether it's chemical or in a foodborne, or infectious can be, by the way, infectious can be the virus, a virus, or it can be foodborne.
Okay.
And then we have chemical and radionuclear. But anyway, so this is different from the mountain areas of Switzerland, or it is from desert, or Arizona or Mexico. So everybody had to, or Afghanistan, where there is some war zone still. So everybody had to draw his health system and imagine his toolkit for a preparedness plan. It had to be contextualized, have the transmission of information wherever they are, have the four diseases. And this, by the way, is the decision instrument where everybody in each country should go through it to see if this is really something to notify WHO and eventually have it as an epidemic pandemic. And the public health, is it serious or not? It's deaths usually, or serious illness. we have to know if it's unknown and unusual. It was not unusual. Coronaviruses are known. It was strange, but it was not more. Risk of international spread is when it crosses the border. And the risk of travel and trade, it was a very important point of this training, is try to not stop economy. And this is where it doesn't.
That was a priority, was to not stop it.
Yeah, because they know that what you said, that it would bring poverty. So it was to keep everything going on, but with safety, but applied to the context and the country. If you have small islands, you're protected. You stop the boats. But you don't need to lock down if you're on a Pacific island and nobody comes to your island.
Right.
I mean, unless it falls down from a satellite.
So let me get this straight, though, because I don't want to let that pass. The goal, really, when you were traveling for the WHO, meeting with these different nations to talk about pandemic preparedness, disease, you know, viruses or foodborne, however it was going to come, the primary goal was, how do we fix the problem without stopping the economy, without stopping your nation from moving? That was the number one goal. So everything else. So I would guess that somewhere on the list, there may be a total extreme situation where you might have to stop the economy, but that would have been the end. The last worst case scenario is we're just going to have to shut everything down. And what we saw in the world, to what me still appears to me to be a bad cold. It has some issues, maybe, you know, that affects some people in high risk categories very badly. But for the greatest part, youth, young people, most adults, it's not that big an issue. And they jump so quickly to shutting down economies, shutting down our lives. It's like it became number one when it should have been number 100.
Yes, absolutely right. And it's exactly what shocked me. I was in South Korea and I came back and suddenly the virus was more here already and we did the lockdown and I was like, what's going on? And I think one of the explanation is that we have technocrats behind this pandemic that have used the transmission of information through the media in an unprecedented way. You see, you can send the information to the whole world. And if you've noticed, in every business, it's the same message everywhere in the world, whether in Sweden, Australia, Africa. I haven't traveled much now, but where I have traveled, it's the same message in the airports. Wow. So they have used I suspect they have used the ministers of technology and telecommunication, because they had so much time from 2012 to 2020 to know and corrupt everybody they wanted in the transmission chain of the United Nations. It's a perfect game. It's the United Nations is a perfect plan. So they invaded, took over, corrupted really well. And you want telecommunication? Just go to the... Because you see, a pandemic is about transport. It is about roads in a country. So it is not just about medicine. And maybe people don't understand that a preparedness plan is not involving just doctors, medicine, and health professionals. They are important, but it involves everybody, the schools, the people. And I always claim that people should be prepared themselves.
Yeah. All right. So clearly, then, this is not just about health. It isn't being driven by science. There aren't scientists making the decision. They didn't bring in. I mean, one of the things you said in the interview, is this true that you said, where were the scientists from the original SARS? Where were they that studied the virus, in the original virus? They must have knowledge. Yeah. There's no you were handed no data inside the WHO that had those scientists weigh in on what they were looking at with this SARS-CoV-2.
Yeah, and you see, one of their illusion is to take people and make people incompetent people, and that cannot really talk about the topic because they're not expert. And they have done this with the news. And for example, in the Ebola already scandal, I knew, you know, a doctor Formenti from France. He was one of the first experts that we always had on our course, and I never heard him speak. I never heard speak some of the top scientists. And those you heard, by the way, like the task force of science in Switzerland, you can look and they all have conflict of interest. They are paid. And I think Dr. Kulo said that very well. He said that he had realized that all the academic chain of decision was corrupted by conflict of interest. And I can tell you, in Switzerland and in many places, you just have to look, even WHO or where you are now at the universities and the university hospitals, which was the ones that were making alliance with, have been paid. Their lab has been paid. And it has been increasingly since 2012 up to now.
Right.
And they censor. So we have to see that science is in a very difficult place. It is corrupt, conflict of interest. The definitions have changed. People speaking and having the microphone are those who they want to, them to speak. So the news you get has absolutely no debate. And this is right. Where you can see how sick it is. It's very bad. And when Ioannidis posts it, they don't talk about it. They ignore it. John Ioannidis has a great article in the World Health Bulletin, and nobody talks about it in on the loudspeaker.
John Ioannidis, we'll have to post that. We'll make sure that everybody gets that since you've referenced it so much. I want to take a look. We haven't covered that paper specifically. Lots of people around him, and it reminds me of another guest we'd love to have on this show. In the end, obviously, you feel compelled enough to be publicly now speaking out. Why did you make that decision? I mean, this can't be good for your career. It can't be good for your persona in Switzerland where you live. What is it you hope to achieve? What is it that we can do as people that are watching this interview right now? What needs to happen to, I think we're involved in a process of saving science. We've got to save science or we will see the destruction of everything we know to be true and down to the ground we stand on. We may have no control over it. So what can we do? What is your hope in coming forward and warning about the things, this connection to Gavi, Tedros being perhaps just put in place in WHO by Bill Gates. Ironically, I never even thought about the fact that two of the leading voices in the center of this pandemic, neither of them are scientists or doctors. That's really shocking. But what is your hope? What can we do? How do we move forward?
It's a good question. Well, why I do this is to explain to people, and I started by writing article, then I was asked to speak on the radio about PCR, and I was doing research and I was trying to find a bioacoustic diagnosis with PCR, and I saw that it didn't go. I called all the labs. I saw it's impossible to do research with this instrument. And I realized that people were really fear. They had so much fear with no understanding, ignorance, that I thought I cannot not speak. That's the first thing. The second is that I have had a problem with the University of Geneva because I was a whistleblower for a false CV of a professor of medicine who had no qualification. And so, I mean, now they want an agreement because I'm speaking. You see, and there are other problems. They have put at the head of the Institute of Global Health somebody who works with vaccines. And he has forced me to put on a picture of the global human rights and global health summer course. I had a vaccine on the picture. So now I understand what's going on, and I have no conflict of interest, and I don't need their job. So I have my reputation, and I'm working for lawyers now, you know, to make reports. So I see an opportunity for everybody to get out of the system, to now denunciate what has been there rampant for years and years. The Faculty of Medicine did not want me to expand my course on preventive medicine. And they were wanting to sell disease treatment, disease vaccine. And I think we have much better to say that we are healthy people. We have an incredible regeneration power. Our immunization is our natural immunization, and they have even banned that. So you cannot stay silent, because then you contribute to them. You contribute to the crime. And so I think that they don't care what I say, because they are so arrogant. They're sure they're going to win. And I think that we all have to be together to win this and to make a new world where there's a new medicine, a new health organization, not disease organization, where we believe again in what we know from ancestry, and we have a lot to say about electromagnetic frequency healing and and many other, you know, natural healing.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, even for the vaccine, we are finding, and Dr. Mikovic had said that too, curcumin and pine needles and geranium, and there is even, you know, detoxification of the blood of graphene, glutathione. So we are finding, and this is going to be the shift, I think, it is that the horror is going to bring a new world, but we have to manage that. It has to be, I mean, I feel the urge to contribute my best for this new world.
Well, I appreciate your coming forward. That is all, I think we're on the same exact page. That is our goal with the high wire. I do see a new world ahead. I do agree with you. I've said recently, even with some of my own health issues, that medicine has changed. Medicine has evolved. There are things happening in medicine, energy, frequencies, all of these things that is so mind-blowing, and technologies that are out there that I really believe in many ways, I've said it's like the cavemen of medicine are clinging to their last grasp of humanity and trying to, apparently through a giant building in Geneva, Switzerland called Gavi, enforce their will of their archaic approach towards health, which doesn't have anything to do with preventing, but only is disease, Centers for Disease Control. It's the perfect name for it, right? Let's control the disease. Let's control the people through disease. I think there's something on the other side of this. I want to thank you for being brave enough to speak out, and hopefully we can, you know, continue to converse as you find more information. I think the connection at Gavi, knowing how powerful it is, how untouchable it is there in Geneva, Switzerland, puts us on a new track to investigate. I want to thank you for all of your work. You truly are a hero. I wish you the best in your travels.
Thank you, Dale. Thank
all
you.
Right.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks for watching. And thanks to the Highwire Insiders who make this show possible. If you'd like to become a Highwire Insider, then go to our website, thehighwire.com, and sign up now. And please, share the show. We're on Instagram, Twitter, BitChute, and now on Roku. Because knowledge is power. Censorship is real. And we need all the help we can get.